Good evening, everyone. My name's Louise, and I would also like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land in which we meet today, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past and present. Waikos always acknowledges this land has never been ceded. I also want to sincerely thank CEDA for operating in this space. The work of WACOS, ACOS and other peaks, this is our voice. This is the area that we work in all the time. So it's really important to have CEDA involved as well, economists involved, and bringing the business community along with us to events such as these. We often talk in our sector that WACOS will hold events, but I'm preaching the converted. So it's really good to see some people here tonight who may not necessarily work in the community service sector, and have heard me speak on many of occasions on this topic. So thank you sincerely, CEDA, and yourself, Paula, because I know how committed you are to this in Western Australia. The CEDA report highlights four areas: better use of data to target early intervention, increasing the allowance to improve the safety net, support to navigate the web of services, and better program evaluation for implementation. So I'm going to try and touch on those four areas, but I might skip a couple of slides because they've actually already been covered. So I'll skip that one. But I can't stand here today without talking about a serious piece of research that's been underway for about 18 months now here in WA, and it's groundbreaking. It's called 100 Families. And I know I've got Paul Flatto in the audience tonight from UWA, who's a partner, and also one of my panel members, Anglicare WA. You can see all the partners are at the bottom. I could spend 10 minutes just talking about this project, but basically it started with groundbreaking research that over 400 families were interviewed who lived in entrenched disadvantage. So it was actually hearing from the people about what does it actually mean, what is it like actually living in entrenched disadvantage. So it started with 400 people, and those interviews took over 2 hours. People were trained to interview them. So it's about time to hear from the people. Instead of having the experts telling them what they needed, they were telling us what we need to do. And that's now translating into, it's moved into and morphed into its second stage of actually why it's called 100 Families, is 100 families that are being interviewed once a fortnight to hear about their life and what it's actually like for them to navigate a system that are stuck in entrenched disadvantage. So this is just some of the information that's come out of the first two snapshots. This information can be cut so many different ways, but the first snapshot, and we produce, please, you know, Google 100 families. Everything we do, everything we produce is actually open to every member of the public. And it produces snapshots like these two here. So, you know, what's like life like living on Newstart? 82% of families reported diagnosed of at least one chronic health condition. 85% do not have access to $500 savings. And this was 164 of those families who are living on Newstart. 46% reported that illness or disability made it difficult for them to get employment. 40% could not afford access to the internet at home. 51% couldn't afford to run a vehicle. The first report that they actually produced, which we found extremely alarming in a country like Australia, and in Western Australia where we have an abundance of food, was around hunger and food insecurity. So two out of those three are adults, so two out of those 400 families indicated that sometimes or often that they couldn't afford to feed themselves and their children. And I find that disgraceful here in Australia. Only 7% of the families who have children living with them reported high food security. So that's in relation to, it's not just having a full belly, but it's about the food that you actually eat. And in the 12 months prior, 58% of the adults experienced hunger and did not eat because there wasn't enough food or money to do so. So that just backs up everything that's actually in this CEDA report in relation to our income support system, which I actually want to touch on now. So one of the questions in the report produced by CEDA was better use of data to target early intervention. I contest there's already enough research, there's already enough reports, and all I've done is thrown up on that page. And this is only stuff that has come out recently from WACOS, from TKO, their national leaders in this country about early intervention that we work very, very closely with, plus 100 families. We 100% agree with the report that there are examples of programs that are working, but we have enough reports, we have enough evidence, and we have the solutions. We need the resources to implement the solutions, and we need that political will, whoever is in power, and we require the community to support. And in relation to data, I recently visited New Zealand, who's been doing a lot of work on this for a long time, and they combined all their data. And under John English, that data was trying to be used to actually about what's the most effective programs and where can we cut. That's what the community heard. And one of the things that they've actually found, and specifically under Jacinta, is that they actually have to rework that data. Not rework that data, sort of rework the message around the data of what they actually give to back to communities. And it's in relation to community wellbeing. Data will never, ever, ever supply the solutions. It provides you information. It ensures that you're absolutely well informed in the decision making. The solutions will come from within the communities who need access to the data. I'm saying data is super, super important, but it is not the solution. It does not provide the answers. And that's what they found in New Zealand, who have been doing this for over 5 years. Getting lost with my papers. Sorry, I've just lost track. So the next question that was asked, support to navigate the web of services. Do people need help in navigating the system, or is the system broken? I say the system's broken, and it's purposely been built that way, and it's purposely been built to be difficult. It's very true that Newstart, there's an inadequacy of Newstart and rent assistance. Our social security was once built with social workers. You used to once upon a time go in there and they would, the process was, how can we actually help you live a better life? Now it's all about robo-debt, the cashless welfare card, drug testing. Numerous reports have proven that JobActive costs billions. There's decreasing number of employers who are actually using the system, and it's all about ensuring compliance. It's not about helping people anymore. And programs such as Parent Next is demeaning, and that's a program that's developed, and 95% of the people on that program are women, and it's about women from, you know, their youngest child about the age of 5, making them accountable. It's extremely demeaning, and again, it's costing millions of dollars. So I would say if the services are already full, or if they're inadequately resourced, or simply not able to solve their problems, then there are better ways to actually do this. We don't need to put out there more navigators to actually guide people to a system that's actually broken. Better program evaluation and implementation. Better data analysis is not alone is the solution, particularly in the absence of the political will to tackle the most fundamental problems. Program evaluation. Yes, we'd like to see better program evaluation of government investment and their decision making to see what's been effective and to ensure they are pursuing evidence-based policy. But that alone is not a magic bullet. Most government programs are simply a band-aid solutions that don't tackle the underlying structural issues. Even the best programs are unlikely to significantly shift the dial on disadvantage in the face of government policy that is creating inequality and exclusion. And the very last slide, and I can't, and thank you again, Paula, for actually showing that video. We can't talk about disrupting disadvantage if we don't talk about gender inequality. The state government, and I'm really proud of this state government, is trying to tackle this head on, and we are in 2 weeks now about stopping family and domestic violence, and a very, very strong campaign from the community sector, government and the corporate world. But there's an underlying issue. There's, I don't know how many reports we actually have to receive, and it's moving at glacier speed, I should actually say, about moving the dial in relation to the gender pay gap. There's lots and lots of solutions that actually can be put forward, and all I've put up on that slide is recently the Department of Communities called out for submissions for the Women's Plan, which sits with Minister McGuirk, and Minister McGuirk is a real champion in this space. However, it needs to be adopted across government. So these are some of the solutions and the recommendations that WACOS has actually put forward. Simple things like housing affordability and homelessness. We need a much, much greater investment in housing affordability and homelessness, especially for single parents. Single parents aren't going to be able to move forward unless they actually have secure housing. So I just wanted to, I know I'm out of time, so I actually just wanted to make mention of this. So if we're talking about disrupting disadvantage, we can't forget gender. Thank you.